Good morning, everybody. I'm Tzipora Gelman, in case you don't know who I am. Thank you for being here this morning. I'm super excited to teach this topic this morning because I taught at Erie Crown for 7 years, and this was like my baby. This was like my intro, the very first day of school. This is what I taught my students, and it was something that I always thought was not only an amazing introduction into really understanding Tanakh, into really understanding Rashi, but also, which we'll probably get to towards the end, really something that I was always curious about, something that I was always fascinated by. Before we get into the real crux of the shiur, talking about the Paraduma, getting into the text, everyone needs to have a chumash from the back table. We have chumashim in case you don't have one. But before we get into it, what I'd really like to talk about is mitzvot in general. How we categorize mitzvot, how do we understand our relationship to mitzvot. And I really would like this to be an interactive shiur. I don't really want to be sitting here for 45 minutes and talking to all of you. I'd like it to be interactive, and since we're a nice group of people, feel free to chime in at any point in time. So if we had to categorize mitzvot, how would we go about doing that? If I had to, there are all different kinds of ways that we can categorize mitzvot. So I'll give you one example, and maybe that'll sort of spiral your thought process on how we go about categorizing mitzvot. So for example, one way to categorize a mitzvah, okay, is we can say, Bin Adam Lamakom, and Bin Adam L'chaveiro. So let's just give some examples. What are some examples of mitzvot that are between me and God?
Praying.
Tefillah. Beautiful. Okay. What else?
Chagim.
Keeping, right? Kashrut. Shabbos. Great. How about B'nadam L'chaveiro? Between us and each other, between mankind.
Tzedakah.
Chesed, Lashon Hara. Anything else?
Kibud
Ava'im, Bikur Cholim. Yeah, we have all these great examples. Excellent. Okay, so that's one way we could categorize a mitzvah. Bin Adam Lamakom, Bin Adam Lachaveiro. We can go through all 613 mitzvot and divide them respectively. This is a mitzvah between me and God. This is a mitzvah between my fellow and I. How else could we categorize mitzvot?
Positive and negative.
Excellent, Shira. Right? Ase and lo tase. Right? So, ase, how would we translate that, for better or worse? Positive commandments. The only problem with saying positive commandments is there's then like a negative connotation associated with negative. So, I kind of think of the ases as like doing. Right? And the lo tase is the ones we stay away from doing. We refrain from doing. Right, so give me some examples of an asay. Tzedakah, tefillin. Go ahead, you can just shout them out.
Shofar.
Great. And lo tases. Avodah Zarah. We can't worship idols.
Killing.
Right. Hereg.
Stealing.
Right.
Lack of observance.
Lack of observance. Okay, excellent. Beautiful. Okay, so we have Bin Adam L'chaveiro, Bin Adam L'makom, Ase Lo Tase. One other way to categorize?
Men
to
women.
This one. Excellent. Doraisa and Zerabana, right? Doraisa or Doraita. I'm used to saying the sa. Sorry. It's just the way I grew up. Doraisa would be mitzvos that are? We have a biblical commandment from the Torah that we have to keep them. So Rabbanan are rabbinic. So let's give some examples. Hang on one second. Okay, so what's a mitzvah? Give me an example of mitzvah d'oraisa. Peruvu. What would be a nice Rabbanan associated with Peruvu? A rabbinic mitzvah. Okay, right, the explanation of we need a boy and a girl, maybe we need two boys, based on all different kinds of stuff like that. Excellent, beautiful. Okay, so these are three ways to categorize mitzvot. You know what I realized? I don't have an eraser. That's going to be a problem. Does someone want to grab like a tissue or something? Oh, here. awesome. Okay? There's one final way I'd like to categorize, and this is probably the most relevant for our topic this morning. I brought this whiteboard, like, from my house, because I just love whiteboards. I don't know. all right. Now they're using, like, smart boards. They're getting all fancy in schools. All right, the final way, you think you can still see, I hope you guys can still see, is as follows. Mishpatim, which I would like to loosely translate as mitzvot that keep society running. Okay? So, what would be some examples of that?
Shabbos.
Well, that keep society running.
Civilized.
Civilized laws, right? Don't kill, don't steal, don't commit adultery. These are things that, without having a Torah per se, might be logical to us, right? We don't want to do things that would harm society, that would be the breakdown of society. Okay? So let's just write killing, stealing. The next categorization would be mitzvot edut. What's the shoresh? Aid, right, which is a witness. These mitzvot I would like to translate as mitzvot where we bear testimony to an event that took place in history. So examples would be Shabbat, when we stand up for Kiddush on Shabbat. So we are bearing testimony to the fact that thousands of years ago, God created the world. He rested, therefore we're resting. We're paying tribute and almost acting as witnesses, what in a court of law, standing up, that God did this so many years ago, and so that's why we continue to do it today. What would be another example? Chagim, all the chagim, essentially. All of the chagim that are d'oraita, yeah? And finally, chukim, which is really going to be the crux of what we're talking about today. Chukim are laws that are described as? We don't know the reason for them. Now, do they have a reason?
Yes.
They have a reason. It's a godly reason, but we don't know what the reason is. So let's just write that down so we have a context. Laws that have a reason, we just don't know what it is. Good? Okay. So now let's look inside. What we're going to do is we're going to take what the Chazal, the Mefarshim, say is the chok of the Torah. Zot chukat haTorah, the quintessential chok, is the Parah Adumah. And we're going to explore it on two different levels. Now, before we do that, let's just talk about Rashi. Normally, when Rashi gives an explanation on any pasuk in the Torah, he will typically first give the pshat, the more simple explanation, a grammatical explanation, and then very often he'll use the Davar Acher, where he will then go into a midrashic explanation, a deeper meaning, a mashal, something to help us connect to the text, right? What he does with Parah Adumah is very, very different in his approach, and it's what I'd like to share with all of you today. Now, some of you might be totally familiar with this, and that's great, so please chime in. If you're not, though, it's just really cool to see how this perish on the Torah, Rashi, who's like famous. I mean, everybody knows Rashi. Kids are learning Rashi from the age of first grade in school. How he could deviate from his typical philosophy and his approach on interpreting the Torah in this respect. And what we'll see that he does is he will first give us the pshat explanation, the more simplistic explanation, the more grammatical explanation for the first nine or so psukim that talk about Parah Adumah. He will continue to go on through the pshat, and then once he's done with the whole topic of Parah Adumah, after about 22 psukim, he will then go back and give the midrashic explanation. Very bizarre. Normally, in each Rashi, on each pasuk, you would see both. Here, we see pshat, and then at the end of all of it, we'll see Josh. And I'd like you to actually look inside with me to see exactly what I'm talking about, because I think it would be more clear if you look inside. Okay, so if everyone could open up to page 838. Perek Yutet, Pasuk Aleph. The first thing we're going to explore is Rashi's pshat on the Parah Adumah. Okay, is everyone with me? We're good?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
All right. Can you still see the whiteboard, or is there too many?
You can see it.
You good? All right. Excellent. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is look at the pshat of Rashi on the first 9 psukim of the Para Aduma, okay? So I'd like some help here just so I could save my voice, all right? If someone could read for me the first 2 psukim. Exactly. Would you like to read?
Sure.
Excellent. Go for it. Excellent. So God is talking to 2 people here.
Moses and Aaron.
Moses and Aaron. Moshe and Aaron. Beautiful. Next pasuk. Perfect, perfect, excellent. Okay, so we see here it says Zos Chuk HaSad Torah, this is the Chok of the Torah. The Para Aduma is the Chok of the Torah, whatever that means, because we know there are other Chukim like Kashrus, Shanez, right? We know there are other chukim, but for whatever reason, the Torah here is telling us, Zos chukas haTorah, this is the chuk of the Torah, that Hashem said to Bnei Yisrael, and as it says as follows, V'chui lecha, take for yourself, para, let's just write these things down here, V'chui lecha, take for yourself, para, what's a para? What kind of cow? A female cow.
Why?
Okay, a female cow. We're going to get into it. Hold on. Female cow, Tamima. Okay, so Tamima actually has a few different definitions. So Tamar, you said pure. Someone else said complete. We'll get to that in a second. Asher Ein Bamum. What does that mean? That has no blemishes, unblemished.
That's the same thing.
Excellent, beautiful. Asher lo ala aleha ol. That has never been worked. That has never had a yolk on its neck, not yolk like an egg yolk like a very heavy device to schlep it through the fields. Okay, so it's never had, I'm sorry?
A harness,
thank you. Never had a harness, essentially never had to work, right? Okay, beautiful. So here let's look at Rashi and understand some of the details here that's going on within the very simple, the very pshat explanation. So if you look down at Rashi, Rashi is like the between the 2 lines here. Does everyone see that? All right. So we're going to first look at Zos Chukat HaTorah, Lefi Shehasatan Ve'umot HaOlan Moninet Yisrael Lomar Ma HaMitzvah Hazot U'ma Tam Yeshba. You see, Rashi is going to first give us a definition of a chok. What is a chok? And he tells us, he says, you see, what's going to happen is the nations of the world, or your own yetzer hara, your own desire to want to know why we do mitzvot, like you asked already, why does it have to be a female cow, right? We're going to have these inner questions, and what you need to know is, lefichach katav bachuka. It was given the name chok for this very specific reason, gezerah himafanai in lecharashus leharherach hareha. This is a decree from God, and you have no right to ask any questions about it. So this is blind faith. This is, I have no idea why I'm doing this, but I'm doing it because God told me to. Okay? There's a very famous movie that I saw when I was a kid, The Karate Kid. Have you guys ever seen The Karate Kid, right? In The Karate Kid, the master is trying to teach young, what's his name? I forget his name. Ralph Macchio, I think was the actor, right? He's trying to teach his pupil, his student, how to do karate. And the kid is so excited. All he wants to do is martial arts. And he comes to his sensei, and the guy says, I want you to wax on and wax off. Wax on and wax off. And the kid is like, this is not karate. I want to do karate. This is not karate. He's like, wax on, wax off. And then he tells him, I want you to hang up your jacket, and then I want you to take off the jacket, and I want you to hang on the jacket, hang off the jacket, right? And the kid is like, this is not karate. And the kid's like ready to go crazy until all of a sudden the master goes and takes a hit at him, right? And wax on, he's able to block the hit. Or he takes another whack at him and he's able to duck because he, whatever, with the coat. I don't know exactly how the ducking had what to do with the coat, but I think you all get the imagery, yeah? So God is telling us to do these mitzvot. We have no idea why. We do them because God told us to do them. We don't question. Please keep this in the back of your minds as we are going to later approach the Midrash, which is going to give us a very in-depth explanation for the Paraduma. Okay? All right. Excellent. Vayikhu Elecha. So what's the problem with Vayikhu Elecha? Based on Pasuk Aleph, which Mrs. Man read, in Pasuk Aleph, how many people is God talking to?
Two
people, Moshe and Aaron. In Pasuk Bet, Vayikhu Elecha. Elecha is?
Singular.
So Rashi is trying to figure out what's going on here. And Pasuk Aleph is talking to two people. In Pasuk Bet, he's only referring to one, by Choy Lecha in the singular. So he needs to explain what that's about. And he says, L'olam hini kreitz al shemecha parashas ha-Moshe ba-Midbar. So he explains that even though he's speaking to Moshe and Aharon, really this mitzvah will always be associated with Moshe Rabbeinu. That this is his mitzvah because he's the first one to perform it. All firsts, like Neil Armstrong getting onto the moon, right, are remembered, they're for eternally connected. So he goes and grammatically explains why we have the singular versus the conversation in the first pasuk with two people. Aduma Tamima. So here we have a problem, and I heard a little murmurings over here, right? We have a problem because we know that the Torah never repeats itself and never says anything twice unless it's absolutely necessary. Tamima means pure and complete. In Bamum means unblemished. Pure and complete, what would that mean in the context of this animal? It would probably mean unblemished, that it doesn't have a cut, it doesn't have a wound. So why is the Torah repeating itself? So Rashi comes to explain this, it's really not repeating itself. Look inside the Rashi, Aduma Tamima. Aduma Tamima, the pasuk is supposed to be read not as Tamima independent, but rather the Tamimut is describing the Admimut of the cow. It's describing the redness of the cow. It's not describing any unblemished nature of the cow, but rather that the redness of the cow needs to be pure, complete. So let's look inside. Shetehei Tamima ba'admimut. It has to be completely red. She'im hayuba shtei se'arot shecharot psula. That if the cow has two black hairs, it's pasul. It's not fit. It's actually not a paraduma. If it has 2.5 hairs,
no good.
Paraduma. If it's got 2 hairs, it's not good, right? So we would almost redo the translation here if we had time to suggest that Tamima is actually describing the redness of the cow to show that it's really a fully red cow. It's only got 2 black hairs in order for it to be a paraduma. Is everyone with me? We good?
Good.
Yes? Good. Okay. Excellent. Let's move on. Pasuk Gimel. Chani, you want to read for me? You're lucky that I know you. Okay. So you're going to take the cow and you're going to give it to Elazar, the Kohen. Elazar is? Who's Elazar? Aaron's son. Okay, the successor of the Kahuna. You're going to take her out of the camp, and it will be shechted in front of him. So Rashi here wants to explain to us, Elazar, Okay, so we're going to get into that more in the Midrash. Why not Aharon? If Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, he's still alive. Why is his son performing the deed, right? It's almost like if they were to ask my son to, I don't know, go and give the drasha on a Shabbos, it would be a little bit weird. I don't know. Maybe I think it would be a little bit weird. Right? So if you have the Kohen Gadol instated, then why are you asking his son? But we're not going to get into the emotional details here because this is not the Midrash. We're in the world of Pshat. And what does Rashi tell us? Elazar, mitzvah tabaskan, this mitzvah was given to the deputy Kohen, the second in command. No explanation that's emotionally, why are we emotionally connected to it, but rather,
straight
out, that's just the mitzvah, this is who he explains this is given to. All right, Al michutz l'machaneh, chutz mishalosh machanot, we're going to take it out of all three camps. We had machaneh shechina, machaneh levia, and machaneh yisrael. We're going to take it out of all three camps. V'shachad osa lefanav, who's doing the shechting in front of who? Who's slaughtering the cow in front of who? Look inside, zar shochet ve'elazer ro'eh. A stranger, a random person will shech the cow in front of Elazar. Again, all grammatical explanations, all helping us to understand the specific process by which the paraduma becomes the paraduma. Yes? Okay. Let's continue. Pasuk Dalid. This is really just, I'm going to breeze through this really quickly just so that we understand the process by which the paraduma is executed, and then we'll move on to the midrash. Okay. Pasuk dal v'lakach Elazar hakohen midama be'etzpo. So Elazar takes from the blood of the animal and he sprinkles with his finger v'hizal nochach pnei ohel moed, and he sprinkles blood towards the ohel moed midama sheva pamim, 7 times. Weird, random. Yes, but do we? I don't know. It's a chok, so we don't really understand why we're doing any of this, but we're doing it. Okay. Pasukei, v'sarav et hapara le'inav, he burns the cow in front of him, et orav, et v'sarav, et ama, the hide, the skin, the flesh, the guts, the everything, apirshay yisrof, everything from the cow ends up getting burned. It's really beautiful and stunning imagery. V'lakacha kohen, and the kohen takes its erez, cedar wood, ezov, hyssop, ushni tola'at, and a red crimson thread.
Hyssop is what?
Hyssop is like a moss-like plant that is sort of described as like growing low to the ground versus the Eitz Erez, which is supposedly at the time the cedar was the largest tree out there. Ushni tola'at and this red crimson thread. V'yishlich al toch sreifat hapara, and he throws it into the burning cow. V'chibes begadav ha-kohen, he washes his clothing. V'rachatz b'saro, he cleans his body. B'mayim. V'achayav ha-machane v'tamei ha-kohen v'ra'erev. The kohen remains tamei until nightfall, until he can return to the camp. V'asoreif otay chabes begadav b'mayim. V'rachatz b'saro b'mayim. The person who is doing the burning also goes through this process of washing his body and all of his clothing. V'tamei ha-ra'erev. And he too is tamei until nightfall. Pasuk tet. V'asat ish shahor et eiv ha-para. So what ends up happening in the process of bringing this cow, this red cow, and this concoction of his blood and guts and skin, and the cedar wood, and the hyssop, and the red crimson thread, is that the Kohen becomes tameh through the process, becomes impure, ritually impure, and the person who was tameh lameis, the person who came into contact with the dead body, now becomes pure. Okay, now the way, this is really essentially what we don't understand about the paraduma. That is really the most perplexing part of what is so confusing about this mitzvah. That a person who's pure can enter the process, leave it impure, and that a person who is impure can enter the process and leave it pure. So essentially, in the end of the day, that's really what it is that we don't understand about this mitzvah. Because it just doesn't make any sense. It's just
the reverse of what you would normally think.
Right. Okay?
And what's the purpose of all that?
And what's the purpose, right? So now, Rashi continues to go through his shot of all these psukim, going into all the intricacies, for another 22 psukim. Well, not another 22, for like another, I don't know the math. 22 minus 9. Come on. There you go. All right? And now, at the end of his whole explanation, according to the pshat, according to the simple explanation, the grammatical explanation, all these fine details that we just went through, he's now going to bring in his Rebbe, Rebbe Moshe Adarshan, and he's going to explain something very interesting, very fascinating. And this is all based on the Midrash. So it's almost like you have to put pause on everything we just went through and sort of hit play on a different screen of a totally different explanation of what's going on with this mitzvah. And what he's going to do, essentially, the premise for what Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan is going to present us with is that there are two famous cows in the Torah. Two famous cows. And if there are two famous cows, there has to be a correlation between them. It can't be that they're just random. There has to be something that connects the two. What are the two famous cows? Cheta Egel and Parah Aduma. And what he's going to say, his thesis is that the Para Aduma comes to be mechaper, to atone for the golden calf. Now, in doing so, what's the problem with him doing this?
Just keep this in mind. It wasn't a para. It's only an egg.
Okay, so we're going to get into that. But what else, fundamentally?
That's not what it's used for. It's used for tumas meis, as opposed to, you know, maybe a bodhisattva.
Okay, so, right, you're going to see a lot of similarities between the two cows. We're going to see a lot of differences between the two cows. But what fundamentally is the problem with Rabbi Moshe Adarshan saying that the Tavo Ha ha-para l'chaper, why is this cow coming to be mechaper on the para, on the chet ha-egel?
But the chet was the chet of the people. I mean, how is one cow going to chaper the other? The people did the
chet. Right, we're going to go into all that. But what, the very premise of Rabbi Moshe Adarshan. It's a chok. Rashi just told us in the pshat, I'm going to tell you the pshat. I'm going to tell you all the intricate details of who's talking to who and what has to happen and out of the three camps and blah, blah, blah. But it's a gezera. In the charesh osahar, you don't get to look into it. You don't get to think about it. You don't get to come up with an explanation for it. And yet, in the Midrash, which we're about to see, he is going to show us how every line from the Paraduma has a direct correlation to the Chet Egel. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it seems that he is giving us a reason for why Paraduma exists. Does everyone understand? Mm-hmm. Should I repeat that one more time? Are you with me?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why he allowed to do it, because it's a Midrash.
Exactly, and we'll hopefully come to a resolution at the end. Okay, so here's what I want everyone to do. I want you to fast forward to page 842. 842. Yeah, one more back. And what we're going to see, so here Rashi went through all of his pshat, and now if you look in the Rashi, you'll see seven lines down. There's like a bet and a kuf. Does everyone see that?
Yeah, small print.
I know, it's very small print. My apologies for that. Yourself. Thank you. you see it says Zehu Perusha? Does everyone see that?
Yeah.
All right. So here is where Rashi is now going to go into the full explanation of the Midrashic explanation of Paraduma. Okay? So, just erase. All right. Midrash. Here we go. Zehu Perusha Lefi Mashma'a V'Hilchotaha. So I went and I gave you all of the explanation of the Paraduma according to the Pshat, according to the Halachot. U'medrash Agada Hetakti Misode Sh'Rabbi Moshe Adarshan. But I inherited from the great wisdom of Rabbi Moshe Adarshan the following, Bezehu. And here what he's going to do is he's going to take the exact same words from the Paraduma and he's going to draw a correlation between the two cows, the Paraduma and the Chet Egel. Vayikhu Elecha. So the language in the Pasuk is Vayikhu Elecha. Now I'll just remind you, what was the Pshat when we said Vayikhu Elecha? What was Rashi's simple explanation? It's Moshe's mitzvah. He's the first one to do it. Here, totally different. Let's look inside. Mishalahem. There was a taking of their own. Kishem Shehem Parkunis Me'azahav La'egel Mishalahem. Just as the Jewish people took their jewelry and contributed it in order to create the Egel, Kach Yaviu Zo L'Kapara Mishalahem. So too, the Lashon of Lekicha, the Lashon of taking, is used in the Paraduma. So, what taking from the Chet Egel parallels or is corrected by the Paraduma?
The people are going to take it.
Well, the people are going to take it, or right, in this case, Moshe Rabbeinu, or the people in general. Okay, so, just as Bnei Yisrael took their jewelry, we now take the Paraduma to atone for their taking. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
No. Should be something we take that's taken from the people. Well, it's a cow that's taken from the people. I mean, it's, they'd have to find that there were requirements of it. Right, okay, again, we're in the world of Midrash, right? Okay. So we sort of have to, like, suspend our... and you're going to see a lot of them are, like, for the positive, and a lot of them are just reminders of the chet, not necessarily corrections for the chet. In this case, we take in order to balance out the taking, but you'll see in some of the other explanations that they're not. So, but no, it's a great point. It's just... you kind of have to like live in a different. We're like, remember, we're on pause here, and
well, you asked if we're on play here.
Right. No, I mean, right. I mean, like the taking and the taking.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay. Okay. Para aduma. So remember in the pshat, what was the explanation for the para aduma? We didn't have an explanation for para. Aduma we had, tamima, that it had to be completely red. It couldn't have two black hairs. Here, totally different. This is like one of my most favorite mashalim because I could totally relate on many levels. Okay, so para aduma, a female cow. Female red cow. Mashal. So Rashi gives us a mashal, and he says as follows. Mashal ben shivcha. So imagine you have a cleaning woman, and her son comes to work with her, and she works in the palace. Shatina paltin, and her son comes to the palace, and she's doing her job of cleaning, and he makes a mess all over the palace.
Oh my.
Right? Oh my. Right? Once in a while, my housekeeper will bring her son, and he sits on his device, like, you know, perfectly not doing anything, right? But imagine he were to come and he were to take filth and disgust and put it all over the palace of the king. She would be gone very soon, right? I'm sorry. Let's see. Amru. So the king says to her, Tavo imo batikana chatzoa. The mother has to come and clean up the waste of her child. Kach tavo para utechaper al ha'egel. So, a mashal of a child who comes and makes a mess of the king's palace, the king says, you have to clean it up. You got to clean up the mess of your kid. Right? So what specifically is it focusing on here? Mother.
A female.
Right? Why, I think you asked before, Mrs. Van, why is it a female cow? Why is it... I mean, female cows is kind of funny, right? Female, it's like a human.
Yeah.
So mother cow.
Well, the mother's the important one.
Yes, right? Like this is a heifer. I'm just saying cow because, like, I think of a cow, right?
The mother's the important member of the family.
Amen to that. All right. So why does it have to be female?
Because
Mrs. Mann wants to know. Why
birth.
Female specifically? Because
it gives birth.
She's cleaning up the mess. What's the mess?
Her child is messy.
The egel of her kid.
Yeah, but how can you compare a mess what a child does to what the Bnei Israel did with the egel? I mean, it's really only
so
with
it's the men who gave the. But an egel is a baby calf, so meaning she's cleaning up.
Right.
The head of Bnei Israel, I do assume, with an egel, is just no comparison to what a mess a child does.
Okay, in this case, it's talking about the tsoa, which is actually waste. So we're not just talking about like a mess where he takes out like toys and makes a mess. We're talking about his waste, his bodily waste, spreads it on the walls. What the Bnei Yisrael did in the Chet HaEgel...
much more than that.
Well, it's likened to it, right? It's the same. I mean, there's really nothing more gross than... what I'm describing here, right? And the Chet HaEgel is like, that is our tarnishing point in history. That is like, it doesn't really get much worse than the Chet HaEgel, right? The Jewish people are going to receive the Torah. Moshe's running late. What's going on? He comes down and he sees them worshiping another idol. I always told my students, it's like going to your wedding day. Not us going to our wedding, but imagine someone going to their wedding day. And they walk, you see this like in movies all the time. And they walk into their wedding day. And they see the person that they're going to marry in the arms of another woman. That's it. That's what they did, right? So it's, again, only the Midrash can sort of paint this picture, yeah? Okay. All right. Okay, Aduma. Aduma. Why is the cow red? Again, remember in the Pshat... how did Rashi describe the redness? As a halachic explanation, right? It has to be completely red. It can't have two black hairs. In this case, why does the cow have to be red, according to the Midrash? Ashem imya dimu katola shehachet karoi adom. Right? What does that mean? Right? Red is always associated with...
black.
Sin. right? It's associated with blood, death. There, in some communities, they don't allow red to be worn. Oh, Christmas, that's interesting. Right? So red is associated with sin. And so the cow, and here's an interesting way of looking at it, right? The para aduma has to be red in order to what? Remind us
of the sin.
Of the sin. Is it correcting for the sin?
No.
No, if anything, you would think then it would maybe be white. Purely white cow, right? Just a note there. Okay. Timima. Timima. So in the first explanation that we gave, we had Tamar said pure, and someone else said complete. And ultimately we said it means complete, right, or pure, as opposed to unblemished, which at some points it is used as that. Tamima al shem Yisrael shehayu tamimim. So B'nai Yisrael were coming to receive the Torah, and they were perfect. But then what happened? V'nasu bo bale mumin. But when we did the Chayta Egel, as you said, right, we became
unclean,
well, blemished. Tarnished, disgusting, not fit for God, exactly. Tavozo, let her come, the paraduma come, utechaper aleihem, and atone for them, the yachzeru latamusam, and restore them to their state of perfection, of purity, of wholesomeness. Yeah? So why does the paraduma have to be perfect, red?
Or count for the other.
Correct. But also notice that here in the Midrash, there's no ein bamum. Right? There's no unblemished. And yet it's using tamima here to mean unblemished, which is just an interesting note. I'm sure there's a reason for it. I just don't know what it is, right? So, this cow has to be perfect. It has to be perfectly red. In this context, it has to be unblemished because B'nai Israel were this perfect nation, this perfect bride, and then they became blemished. So, let the paraduma come and restore the Jewish people to their purity.
I have a question. This is a nice message.
Yes.
Does the Talmud discuss it? And what do they say?
Sure.
That will not be accepted in it.
So there's plenty of discussion. For our purposes today, what I really wanted to show was this pshat drash comparison. We could maybe have a part two on chukim in general, how we are to relate to them in general.
I always wondered what's the real...
Right, so you might leave feeling like a little bit unsettled.
That's a question.
Yes.
Do that a lot? Show both ways of interpretation, the pshat and the drash?
So normally, the way he does it is he'll do it in one pasuk. Oh. Like you'll have
the pshat and the drash
in the exact same excerpt. But here, he does it very uniquely where he divides the two. Where first he goes through the whole explanation of this of the pshat, the halachot, the grammatical syntax, and then fast forward, stops, and goes back. Yes.
Can I interrupt maybe to satisfy a little bit your
yes,
question?
Yes, please interrupt.
I think what Rashi is trying to say here, just from what I'm listening here, not from my own personal learning or knowledge, is that there's the pshat with the chok, it's just pshat. That's all we need. The drash is just a nice additional thing, meaning we're not taking it as, you know, any sort of
literal, right.
Implication.
But...
Because that's the whole thing with chukim is that we don't take our you know, interpretations as any sort of guiding force in what we're doing.
So still,
it's just giving us like a nice idea. I think that's what he's trying to say here. Is that
I
like,
understand, but let alone the Midrash, we still, even though it's a chok, mm-hmm. we still,
mm-hmm.
there must be a reason, even though we don't know the reason, but isn't there an attempt to understand the reason?
Right. Are you going to talk about it?
So I really was going to resolve it very, very simply. I really wasn't going to spend a lot of time on that. If anyone would like...
The whole point of chukim is that it's kind kind of like nuts of an Ishma. We do them without really knowing. We can come up with solutions and answers, but that shouldn't guide why we do the hukim. Meaning the point, we can come up with solutions, and they're nice, and they make us better able to do these mitzvot, but at the same time, that's not, the reason should not be the impetus for the mitzvot.
Okay.
Thank you, Tamar, for assisting here. Okay. All right, we're up to Lo Ala Ala Ha'ol. Right? The cow cannot have ever had a harness on it. It can never have been worked. So if you look here, it says, Kishem Sheparku Me'aleim Ol Shamayim. Right? So there's the idea of Ol Machlut Shamayim, that we accept this yoke of almost like a burden of what it is to be a Jew. It is a challenging lifestyle that we live. It's not always easy. We take upon ourselves a lot of things that the rest of the world does not do. And when B'nai Yisrael did the Chet HaEgel, they threw off their Ol Machlut Shamayim. So just as they removed their Ol Machlut Shamayim, so there's this reminder in the Paraduma that the cow cannot have had an Ol on its neck. Again, referencing one to the other, connecting one to the other, specific direct correlation, not necessarily. But again, I think it is cool. I think it is justified to say that, yes, there are these two cows that exist in Tanakh that are both very famous, that are both very written about and have a lot of discussion around them. And to draw a comparison between them, I still think...
It's medrash, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that's why, again, we're in one world here and then we're in another world here. Okay, so let's just... Let me just rewind here. So Tamima, B'nai Israel lost their pureness, their wholesomeness, so hopefully the power will restore it for them. Lo ala aleha ol, the imagery really of B'nai Israel removing their Ol Machlut Shamayim. Okay.
Tara, I have a question.
Yes.
The story with the yoke thing, like how does that parallel in the story to the carriage, to the, you know, Chet HaEgel? Like
the story of what? I'm sorry?
With the yoke on the cow. So is there any sort of correlation specifically to the Chet HaEgel?
Right, so that's what we're saying. When B'nai Yisrael, that's what I'm saying. So when B'nai Yisrael did the Chet, it was like they removed their undying love of God. They remove their yoke, the burden that we carry of what it is to be a Jew, the responsibility that we carry of being a Jew, and they said, you know what, God's not here, there is no God, let's make a God out of gold.
Olam
mitzvot, right? The idea of, we definitely carry a lot of weight on our shoulders. Okay? Make sense? Okay. All right, Elazar HaKohen. So this is really also one of my really favorite parts of this midrash, where before in the pshat, let's remind ourselves, when it said Elazar HaKohen, what did Rashi say? He's the scan. He's the deputy. He's the assistant. What's the big deal? No big deal. But you took issue and you said, one second, Aaron HaKohen should be doing it, right? If Ziggy Gelman got up and gave the drasha on Shabbos, my oldest son, it would be a little bit funny, right? So, can anyone, before we look inside, think of why Elazar is the one who has to do it and not Aaron HaKohen? Yeah, if you read it already, you cheat.
Maybe
no, just kidding.
Maybe it's training.
I'm sorry?
Maybe to train him.
Okay, so that's really in the pshat, right? The deputy should do it because he's next in line. We'll see very shortly after. Aaron will die. Elazar will take over. But what specifically about Aaron HaKohen?
Wasn't he involved in the chet?
Excellent. He was involved in the chet, right? He tried to stall. He said, hold on a second, right? And in that stalling, they contributed their jewelry, thinking, okay, wait. And then time right now. So what the Midrash is going to tell us is that when you are involved in a chet, you can't be involved in the redemption of that chet. So let's look inside. Elazar Kohen, Kishem Shinikalu Al Aaron. When Bnei Yisrael came and they gathered on Aaron, Shehu Kohen. He was the Kohen Gadol lasso to Egel to make the Egel. Lefi she Aaron asa to Egel. No nitnalo avodazu ayadav. because Aaron was involved in the Chetah Egel, he cannot be the one to bring the Paraduma, which atones for it.
But here Rashi says Aaron asa et ha'egel, and the Torah says vayetze ha'egel.
Yes, but again, where are we? In the world of Midrash.
But Midrash should give Aaron the blame because he was the leader involved in this, meaning he wasn't the actual one who built it, but he gets the blame for it.
Right. She'ein kategor nase sanegor. This is a very famous saying that the prosecuting attorney cannot become the defense attorney. Now, I took issue with this personally, because I felt, well, if Aaron was involved in the chait, then why shouldn't he be the one
to rectify it?
Right. But I don't have an answer to that. I'm just telling you that it bothered me. But anyone who wants to give me an answer for it, I would love it.
He showed them he was the good guy, he wasn't the bad guy.
Right, and if anything, don't we believe that in
it should be him.
It should be, right. But it's not. Because I guess when it comes to a sin this big, when it comes to something this grave and this bad.
So why put it on somebody else?
Well, so no, we're going to give it to his son. Or maybe it's that the son
redeems his
father. I don't know. Yes?
Just to clarify, he does physically name him.
Yeah, okay.
Who? Aaron?
Aaron.
Yeah.
But only for the reason of... Yeah.
Of stalling.
Oh, my God.
Maybe it's like...
louder.
That... there shouldn't be even in his mind, that no one should think even in his mind that he's comparing it with the angle, that he's thinking it's part of it. Like when Hur got killed?
Okay.
Something because his father, he was the one who
think about it.
He got to help Betzalel.
Right.
He got to help Betzalel because his father was the only one who didn't participate in the
chait. Okay, but in this case, his father did participate.
Yeah, his father did, but he didn't. So Aaron participated in it. So nobody should think that he's even, shouldn't be, he's even thinking of making the egel while he's preparing it.
Oh, that's interesting. It's a possibility. Okay, let's just finish up because they just gave me the three-second mark. The reason we have to burn the cow is because they had to burn the jewelry and they had to burn the egel up after it was created, right, and then they had to like drink it. Eitz Erez Ezo Ushni Tola'at. Rashi in the Pshat does not deal with this at all. Just the cedar wood, the hyssop, and the Shni Tola'at. Here it really goes into a nice explanation. It actually gives a twofold explanation. It's going to tell us why there are three ingredients, and it's also going to tell us why these specific three. I'm just going to tell it to you outside, just because for time's sake. Why three for the 3,000 men who fell at the Egel, and why specifically these three? Because the Eitz Erez is this very tall tree, which represents Gava and haughtiness, and the Ezo represents this low-growing, moss-like type plant, which represents humility, and so in order to balance out the two, we're going to throw them in there, and the Shni Tola'at is this red-crimson thread, again, right, there's a lot of this deeper explanation, this imagery of why we're throwing all these things in, again, giving meaning to why we're doing the things that we're doing when it comes to the Paraduma.
But the
Tolat Hashani
was used for the tzitzit later on.
So here what it says is... Right. You're talking about the...
Was it Tolat Hashani, the Fadechut HaTchelet? Which are the lines of today?
Oh.
Red.
No.
Blue.
Crimson. Okay, I'm not sure. Okay, so really... I hope that you can appreciate just the differences between the two explanations. In speaking to my husband, I I wanted to sort of leave you at least with some words of inspiration. I mean, obviously learning inside is inspiring and learning the Raj is inspiring, but what I think I sort of came up with was that while we have this conflict of chukim and laws that we do not understand the reason for them, and it's our love of Hashem that we do them, the wax on, wax off mentality of one day maybe I'll find out why God commanded us to do these things. I don't know why, but I do them because I follow Hashem blindly no matter what, no matter how. We're still encouraged as Jewish people to ask questions, to find meaning, to try to understand why we do the things that we do. Right? Very often we say, oh, I love Shabbos because it means I spend time with my family. Right? Because I attribute meaning to Shabbos, does that mean when I'm not sitting with my family, I'm not going to keep Shabbos? No, but we try to find meaning. People say you keep kashrus because it's healthier, it's better for your digestive system. Doctors come out with all these reasons of why it's a better way to live. So is that why I do it? No. Am I always going to keep kosher? Yes. If I find out that keeping a kosher diet is not necessarily good for my stomach, am I still going to keep it? Yes, 100%. But we're encouraged to explore, to try to find meaning, to try to find connections, to help us to be closer to Hashem in order to ultimately find out why we do the Parah Aduma. And also, I just want to say one final point, that despite all of this explanation of the Midrash, there's still one thing that we don't understand about the Parah Aduma. Even if we were to say that we understood all these details, and that is, the one thing we don't understand is why it's Metaher, a person who is Tameh, why it's Metameh, a person who is Tahor. So even in the end of the day, if you want to say all these explanations make sense, and they resonate with you, and they sit well with you, and the balance is all great, we still don't understand that reason, and so it is ultimately
a chok.
Exactly.